Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Nitro Express podcast. John, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, I don't know. You've talked about two or three different things. You said you wanted to talk a little bit more about some North America hunting, and you wanted me to tell a story. Well, one of the stories that I've got and you wanted to hear about once again was about that old hat that I've got hanging in there in the reloading room. It's an old Stetson hat, gray. I got the pinched four on it. And that particular old hat has a story in that I wore it when I went up into the Northwest Territories of Canada on a sheep hunt. And we were hunting sheep up there. My guide's name was Doc. And to get to where we were hunting at up there, we flew into Watson Lake, or I flew into Watson Lake on the once-a-week commercial airliner. Overnighted there in Watson Lake, got up the next morning, got onto a float plane, flew on in about 2 hours further into the middle of nowhere. Then we got on a horse pack and with a pack string, and we headed on up into the mountains. That particular hat story starts in that we had been hunting about 3 days, spotting sheep every day, but had not found any that we wanted to go after. Right at dark this particular day, we spotted these three rams, but it was too late to go after them. So we marked the spot, went back to camp, spike camp, got up early the next morning, rode back to where we were at, left the horses there tied, and we took off. Climbed up the side of the mountain up and peeked over the top of the one ridge where the sheep should have been. They weren't there. They'd already went down, went up the other, up the next mountain. So we take off and we go up that mountain. When we get up to where they should have been, we peek over the top, no sheep. Well, by now you can imagine poor John is kind of dragging tail. He says, Doc asked me, said, do you want to try one more or are you ready to go back to camp? I said, we come to hunt, let's hunt. So we go down that one back up the other side. When we peeked up the far side of that third mountain, there stood the sheep at about 140, 150 yards. I was shooting a .338 Win Mag. I slipped the old A-bolt over the side, pulled down on the sheep. He told me which one. I looked at it. It was a full curl plus. Touched off the old .338, and the sheep disappeared. The other two sheep, they take off running. But the sheep I shot, he just disappeared. We walked on up there, and when we got to where he was, there was nothing there but blue sky. There was a straight sheer cliff. I have no idea how far down it was. Later, we pulled the topo maps, and it looked like it was like 600-700 feet straight down. Anyway, down on this one little ledge down there, about 300 feet down, there laid the sheep. So we go climbing down, and I do mean climb. I don't mean walking. I mean sitting and holding on with both hands and slipping and sliding. Anyway, we got all the way down to where the sheep was. But now it's doggone near dark. All we had was what little bit of lunch we'd had in our packs. We'd had very little water, and needless to say, I was pretty well dragging it really bad then. We heard water running over to the side. We went over there, and we was able to take one of our water bottles that was empty and filled it up, so we had water. But that's all we had. So we're sitting there, it's getting dark, wind starts howling, this is up almost to the Arctic Circle, and it's getting cold. And when I mean cold, I mean it's real cold. So we're sitting there, my butt got cold. So I pulled my hat off, and I sat on that good Stetson 6X hat, and then pulled my hood up on my hunting coat. We sat there for a couple hours, we're freezing our butts off. And I happened to remember that I had a space blanket in my pack. So I dug around, got the space blanket out. I told Doc, I said, let's unfold this. We'll sit real close together, and we can conserve body heat and put this space blanket around us. All the time sitting on that good Stetson hat. So we did. Well, along about midnight, 1 o'clock, we were sitting there, and I said, Doc, I could sure use a cigarette. He said, me too. I said, tell you what, take one of my Rolios, because I had ones that were ready-made, and he always rolled his own. I said, here, light up us a couple of roly or these ready-mades, and we'll just smoke and wait for daylight some more. Well, he struck the match, and unfortunately, neither one of us realized that space blankets are highly flammable, and whoosh, man, we had a major fire going on there. We went to pounding and got it put out, but then we had a big hole right in the middle of the blanket. And then the fight was on all night on who was going to get the side that had the hole in the blanket. Anyway, got up the next morning, he caped out the sheep, and we started climbing out of there. And it was a terrible, terrible climb. But we made it, and so that's that story of that. Now, the real funny part of this is we come back home here, and that hat kind of became infamous, and my wife decided that she would take that hat down to the local western store called PFI, and she took it down there, and they sell all kinds of hats. She left it there because the guy that was doing the hats wasn't there. They told her to come back a week later. We go back a week later to get the hat, and this old hat's hanging back in the back of this place, and it hasn't been touched. And I asked the guy, I said, hey, that's my hat. Why didn't you clean it, block it, and straighten it up? He got the funniest look on his face. He said, I thought it was a joke that somebody left that here. I didn't know you really wanted me to do it. It looks like it's been set on. I said, yes, sir. All night in the Northwest Territories, if it hadn't been for that, my butt would have froze. Anyway, that old hat's still sitting in there. It brings back a lot of memories.
For those of you that are interested, that'll be the feature photo on this podcast's thumbnail. Want to take a moment and thank you guys. You know, we've had a crazy amount of listeners compared to when we started. We're still very much short into it. This is episode 5. Got listeners from all over the United States. Also have some listeners from Australia. So want to say thank you for that. And Apple Podcasts sent me a notification this week that we are number 56 in the nature category. So excited to see where this goes. Kind of what prompted this discussion, what got John and I thinking, was actually the old hat, and we wanted to talk about some of our favorite cartridges in that medium-heavy category. John, you hunted for years with a 338 Win Mag, is that correct?
Yeah, that for years and years, that was my only what you would call heavy rifle. It's a Browning A-Bolt. You've heard me refer to it, I'm sure, in previous podcasts. All the bluings wore off of it. Stock has half of the finish wore off of it. It's been all over North America, three or four trips up into Canada, and in and out of saddlebags, and or not saddlebags, saddle scabbards, and just a nice old rifle that really did me well for a lot of years.
The other one I kind of wanted to talk about, my experience with the medium heavies, if you will, is a little different. I, as most Americans are, love 30 cals. You heard me talk about my 300 H&H. We're getting ready to take on our bear hunt this fall. But we mentioned that bear hunt we did in Idaho, and in it I took a 300 Remington Ultra Magnum. Still got it today. Still hunt with it. Have hunted Africa with it twice. Enjoy it. But really, it's not a true medium heavy. It has a lot of velocity. You can throw some really heavy 30 cal pills at wonderful velocities. But we're talking about a little more frontal diameter here. And so a cartridge that's always kind of interested me, although neither one of us have any actual experience with it, is a 35 Weld. So John and I are going to go back and forth. We're kind of going to discuss the 338 Win Mag. The 35 Whalen, maybe some applications for it here in North America as well as Africa.
Well, the 338 that I've got back there that I like so well and have shot so much was a gun that I could afford. Back when we were talking about getting that one, I only had three guns. I had my shotgun. I had an old Remington 700 in 270. And then I had this 338. That was all that I could afford, raising a family and what have you. Of course, I've always hand-loaded forever. And on that 338, I was loading it with 200-grain nozzler petitions. and I was loading it with R19, Reloader 19. Hey, by the way, did you see that little blurb that's come out through the internet that they've been notified by Outdoor, I forget what it is, the company that owns Alliant, Outdoor Media or whatever, they are not going to take any orders for Reliant powder in the near future.
Scary stuff. We shoot a lot of Alliant powder, have had phenomenal luck with it. Like you, probably have a lot stockpiled. But if you can see it, if you can find it, and if you shoot it, better stock up.
Yeah, it's really crazy. I mean, that and your Alliant powders now, and then Magnum, large rifle Magnum primers, you know, I don't care what they cost. If you want to shoot, you better grab them. But anyway, I'm shooting that old 338 with the 200 grain nozzler petitions and shooting Alliant RL, I can't even talk tonight, 19, and I was loading it with 75 grains, and that's pushing it out somewhere between 2975 and 3,000 feet per second. You have to be careful with that because it does get up to where that's close to being a compressed load. Most of that is about 102% of capacity with what I was shooting. And if I wasn't shooting the 200s, then I would back it back down to the 180s and shoot that with the Alliant 19. And there again, with about 76 grains of powder, I could push it just a little over 3,000 feet per second. And again, almost a compressed load. And I don't like to do that, but such be it, so be it. The Alliant powder, nozzler petitions, been my go-to powder and bullets for a long time.
Kind of interesting how all this goes full circle. If you've listened to much, you know that I'm kind of the historical perspective guy. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes that there's nothing new under the sun, and to a degree that's true with the 338 Win Mag. So our first podcast episode was on the 375 H&H, a wonderful cartridge, one of our favorites, and it's had several offspring. Of those, they were all the Winchester Magnum cartridges of the late 50s and early 60s, 264, 300, and the 338, and then the 458 Win Mag. Really good timing on Winchester's part. 338 Win Mag came out in 1958. The first rifle they chambered it in was their Alaskan Model 70. Came out in 1959, first year that Alaska became a state. And this is a standard length Magnum cartridge. So shorter than the 375 H&H, shorter than that 300 H&H we talked about on the bear hunting episode. Really offers a lot of performance in a small package. John and I were kind of studying the ballistics. You know, he likes those 200 grain bullets. If I were to shoot it, I'd probably load 225s. I just think they give you a little better sectional density. With those 225 grain bullets, you're getting a sectional density of 0.281, which is very respectable, and somewhere in that 2,700 feet per second range using any of your favorite powders, any of the Reloader 19, 22, 25s, IMR 4831 or 4350. There's really a wide variety of powders to shoot with this. Like John said, because of the case capacity, even though they're hard to get, we like the Magnum large rifle primers. But think it's a excellent choice for all your North America hunting, as well as Africa.
Hey, you mentioned all of those cartridges. It all came out and based off of that 375, and that's all very, very true. But of all of those that you mentioned, all of those were successful except that 458 Win Mag. And the 458 Win Mag has never achieved a degree of success that these others have. It got a very bad reputation in Africa in its early days, and that it was wounding animals. We later found out that for the most part that was bullet problems, not rifle problems. But as is so often the case, whatever reputation the gun or the bullet or the powder gets early tends to live with it the rest of its life. And quite honestly, even today with modern powders and modern bullets, it's going to be very hard to take a 458 and push it up over 2,000 feet per second. And for a dangerous game rifle, I personally want something that's up into the 2,200 feet per second with at least a 300 grain bullet in the 375 and a 400 grain bullet above that.
Yeah, kind of interesting. A lot of lore around the 458 Win Mag. Kind of getting a little off topic here, but love chasing rabbits. So stepping back even further, the thought of these 45 caliber cartridges goes back to the 450 Nitro Express 3 1/4. So again, that's a rimmed British cartridge designed for the Farquharson. I always say that wrong. Single-shot falling block rifle as well as double rifles. And when it came out, shot a 480-grain .458 bullet at roughly 2150. There was a rebellion in India at the time, which was one of the British colonies, and there, a lot of the rebels used the old Martini Henry and 450-577. And so as a response, the British banned all 45 caliber bullet production and so killed off the 450 Nitro Express. I believe that was in 1907 or 8. You can do some research on that.
You're talking about that Martini Henry. Those of you that like to watch TV as opposed to reading books, if you look at the movie about the battle at, is it Borkum's Rift?
Rorke's Drift.
Rorke's Drift.
Zulu, the old movie with Michael Caine.
Yeah, Michael Caine and that. All of the British guys there are shooting those single-shot Martini rounds. Interesting. So sorry to interrupt, that's a point that if you don't like to read, you can watch a TV show and finally see the old Martinis at work.
Sure. So that really threw the British gun trade into wild question, because that was an extremely popular cartridge. I believe it was developed by Rigby. And so the answer to that was Joseph Lang and Company, a small firm, took that 450 Nitro Express 3 1/4 and necked it up to 470 and released that to the trade, meaning that any maker could make a rifle in that cartridge. And that's where we get the 470 Nitro Express today.
Yeah, and that 470 Nitro in a double rifle is an extremely effective round, still hunted today, carried by many, many, many professional hunters. Of course, we call our podcast the 500 Nitro Podcast.
Nitro Express.
Well, Nitro Express, excuse me. You know, I don't have this all written out. I'm doing this off my cuff, which at my age, the cuff is a relatively high up. It doesn't drag the ground anymore. Now you got me interrupted. What was I saying?
470 is very popular, as John was saying. We shoot 500s, but as far as the majority double rifles you're going to run into, 470 probably far and away the most popular. Behind that, the 500, and then third, the 450, 400. So bringing this all back full circle to where we started with the 458 Win. Whenever Winchester decided to load that, they decided that a 500 grain bullet would be ideal. And it does have wonderful sectional density. However, for the 1960s, that was a little too ambitious. There's not quite the case capacity that's there. You know, you hear horror stories, whether or not they're true, I don't know, but of bullets being glued in place because they were such a compressed load over time, the bullet would work out and no longer be seated. But not necessary, especially with modern bullets, certainly with modern flat nose monolithic solids, not necessary. I ran the numbers today to have comparable sectional density to the gold standard, the 375 H&H with the 300 grain bullets. You could drop down as light as a 450 grain bullet and a .458. So with the 500s, John and I both agree, 458 Win's not ideal. If you want to shoot a heavier bullet, if you really want the most mainstream thing, we support, shoot a 458 lot. But if you want to, if you're dead set on a 4.58 wind, certainly consider a little lighter bullet, maybe the traditional 4.80 grain, or even as light as 4.50 if you can find them.
You're being polite. There's absolutely, in my opinion, no room in Africa on a dangerous game hunt for a 4.58 wind mag. I've talked to too many hunters over there, too many people that hunt that professionally, and the only guys that'll carry a 4.58 wind mag are those that are unable to afford a different caliber and a different gun. It is universally disliked. It is ranks up there right along with the 6.5 Creedmoor. And I know we're supposed to be all nice and polite and make everybody happy, and that's all well and good. But the truth is the truth, and the problem is that the 4.58 Win Mag has problems. I would not recommend it to you to use on a dangerous game hunt. And the 6.5 Creedmoor has problems in that it wounds African game, and so I don't recommend that one to you. Now, we started all of this. We were going to talk about something totally different, and we've kindly got off subject. So bring us back online, Matthew.
So the 338 Win Mags, where we started, can also discuss the 35 Whalen. But it's interesting, really, how interconnected all these cartridges are, and it may seem like a bit of a stretch. So we talked about the 338 Win Mag. The other one that I want to talk about is the 35 Whalen. And again, it goes back to the 375 H&H. So the 1920s in America, the 375 H&H came out in 1912. Bolt actions were still relatively new. Winchester had not yet released its Model 70. A lot of rifles were A303, P14s, P17s, World War I, holdovers. And so trying to find a cartridge that would fit in a standard length action and provide some, quote, magnum performance was tough. And so Colonel Townsend Wayland, you've probably heard the phrase, you know, only accurate rifles are interesting. That was him. And so he had kind of the brainchild, got with a designer at Griffin and Howe, which was, it's still in business today, but at the time was a very high-end rifle customizer, restocker. They never, you know, developed their own action, but did a lot of custom work and custom fitting. And so what's the only thing that's all American? 30-06. And so let's neck it up to 35 cal, and poof, we get the 35 Whalen.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, and you cannot beat, in my opinion, for North America, for an overall cartridge being any better than the old 30-06. It's been around forever. It's proven itself. It's been tested. You can take an odd six with a 200-grain bullet, and you can still push that up close to 2,700 feet per second. If you want to get more trajectory, you drop it back down below that with a little bit lighter bullet. Matthew loves these heavier bullets as opposed to the lighter ones. I always try to get back down into, for North America, especially deer or bear or something like that, something in the 150, 165 grain on these newer modern cartridges. And it's hard to beat a 150 grain partition bullet in a 30-06. Again, loading it with Reliant 19, and I can push that and get 3,000 feet per second out of it, which is all the velocity and trajectory that you'd ever want to have for the majority of your hunting in North America.
So John's not a big fan of the 35 Whalen. I am in the right application. And I want to throw some numbers out here that'll kind of shed some light on it. So we talked about that 338 Win Mag, wonderful cartridge. Wasn't developed by Elmer Keith. He's the guy that came up with the 357 and the 44 Magnum. And so he was a big fan of the 338 Win Mag. Used it a lot. Great cartridge. But if you compare both the 338 and the 35 Whalen, shooting a 225 grain bullet, kind of interesting. You're going to be somewhere in that mid to upper 60 grains of powder on that 338 Win Mag for roughly 2,700 feet per second velocity. On a 35 Whalen, you can get, you know, 2,600, maybe 2,650 if you really push it, feet per second with a 225 grain bullet, and you're going to be using anywhere from 10 to 12 grains less powder. So it's an exceptionally efficient cartridge. Interesting for that. I like it. One, it's kind of nostalgic. Townsend Whalen's a very cool guy. I don't know if he listens to this or not. There's a guy on one of the forums we really like, and his name on the forum, his handle is Bob Nelson 35 Whalen, and the 35 Whalen is Bob Nelson's answer to everything. He's an Australian. If you're listening, Bob, we really appreciate it. And if you are listening to know Bob, tell him we give him a shout-out. But the interesting conundrum you run into with the 338 Win Mag and the 35 Whalen is that sectional density versus frontal diameter. So with a 338 shooting the same bullet weight, because it is a smaller diameter, you're going to have better sectional density, which in theory gives us better penetration. But with a 35 Whalen, you're going to have a larger frontal diameter, which in theory gives us a larger wound channel. So I don't think you could go wrong picking either one here, but just kind of interesting to argue the points.
That's interesting, though, too. Lipsky's has just come out with their new 35 Whalen that's hitting the market right now. For a long time, a new 35 Whalen was next to impossible to find. You can find these coming out now new on the market for about $1,800. And if you get lucky enough and pick up a used one, it'd be even less. I sent you a little blurb there the other day. What was it, 17 something?
I believe it's right at 16. Those are Lipsy exclusive Ruger made M77 Mark II rifles. Really sharp looking rifles, walnut stocked, blued, three position safety, wing safety. Really, really sharp rifle. Like John said, if you like the 35 Whalen, you're definitely probably looking for a used or semi-custom rifle. But it's interesting that these have just came out as a Lipsy's exclusive. I think MSRP on them is $1,579, just a touch under $1,600.
Yeah, but they're actually, a lot of them are selling for a little over MSRP.
Yeah, they're hard to find, and so a lot of them you see on Gun Broker in that $1,800 range, kind of like that Ruger made Marlin 4570 Trapper that I've got. Popular, hard to find, and so when you do find them, you may have to pay a little bit more. But they're a sharp-looking rifle, and as far as one that I would hunt with today, a factory rifle you can get, that's the only one that comes to mind.
Well, the other thing that I always have against any of these oddball cartridges that you so erroneously employ your mind against, I think you just pick out the one that sounds different from everybody else so that you can be different. Have you priced any 35 Whalen brass?
You know, I can't say that I have.
Have you looked to find any?
I have not. Have you?
Well, no, I don't like them, so I don't care. But I can just dadgum near bet you that 35 Whalen brass, one, going to be expensive, two, going to be hard to find. So while you're fiddle-farting around trying to find your brass, I'm going to sit there with my 338s. I'll be loaded and ready to go hunting while you're still hunting to find components.
Well, you know, you haven't looked for 338 brass in a while. It's been hard to get here lately. One of the
well, I don't have to find 338 brass. I know exactly where it's at. It's back there in the reloading room. I got hundreds of them.
Yeah, we've also got 450 number 2 Nitro Express. When's the last time you saw that?
Well, that was another one of those where took a wild hair and thought about buying a 450 and never did get around to it. So I got some of those that could be bought well worth the money.
Yeah, you know, one of the plus, too, with the 35 Whalen is since it is based off the 30-odd 6 case, you could certainly take a forming die and form some. Quick search here on the internet. Looks like you can find new 35 Whalen brass as cheap as 97 cents around. Of course, this is as of mid-May 2024. That's federal brass. And if you wanted some normal brass, looks like our friends over there at Raven Rock Precision have got some for $1.36 a piece.
Well, that's not near as expensive as I thought it would be.
Yeah, so not that it matters, you know, to me, one of those points that people say, well, I can shoot pistol bullets out of it. You can, but there's a big difference in construction and pistol bullets and rifle bullets, and I would not be comfortable, because it will shoot, 38 caliber or 357 bullets.
Nobody in their right mind would be doing that.
Maybe practice bullets, but definitely not for hunting.
Well, if you're going to practice with something that different, how are you going to judge what it's going to do with your hunting bullets? That's crazy. That's like saying, okay, I'm going to practice with a 22 long rifle and then jump up to a 375 and I'll have the same thing. Well, it you can't do that. You need to. The one thing that was always beat into our heads in the Army, especially, is you fight like you train. So if you're going to train and become proficient with a weapon, you need to train with what you're going to shoot. So if you're going to shoot a 35 Whelen, I don't have a problem with that. But load the bullet like you're going to take it hunting, and then practice with it, get used to it. Name the weapon, by the way, so that you and the weapon become one. But this idea of putting a pistol bullet into a rifle cartridge to practice with it, that's a good way to die.
It's been done. Not saying I support it. They're the same diameter. You can load them. That's just one of the arguments that you hear when it comes to 35 Whelen.
Yeah, well, I can pee into a hurricane too, but that don't mean I ain't going to get wet.
All right, let's keep going here. You know, kind of tying things up, this has drug on a little and been a little more scatterbrained than we had planned, but back to the 375 H&H. One of the things we said whenever we did our podcast on the 375 H&H is you could drop down to a 250-grain bullet and hunt anything in North America you wanted, and that's still absolutely true. Looking at the manual here, you can comfortably shoot a 250-grain 375 H&H and somewhere in that 2,850 feet per second velocity range. And so by that argument, you know, I'm shooting a 25-grain heavier bullet than I can with the 338 or the 35 Whelen. You can shoot both 250 grains in them. But again, our preference is those 225s at 100 feet per second, 150 feet per second more velocity. So again, the old timer comes through.
Well, yeah, it's like everything else, though. If everybody liked blondes, there would be no need of redheads. So yeah, I can't argue anything against a 375. But then again, when I go back into the arms room back there, I've got one of a lot of different calibers, and I like a lot of those as much as I like the 375, depending on the application. But you can't argue against a 375. But I'm like you. I can load it and do whatever I want. But just like right now, we're getting ready to go on that bear hunt. And for our long-range stuff, I'm taking a 264 Win Mag.
Yep. So we are not the guys to tell you to not buy another rifle. If you have to fib a little bit and say, hey, honey, I need this new rifle for this hunt, go for it. We're guilty of it just as much as you are. But if you're the kind of guy that says, hey, I've got this 375 I really like, going to go do an elk hunt, going to go do a brown bear hunt, going to go do a moose hunt, I really like this 375. What's a good option for it? Shoot 250s and you'll be just fine.
Well, I got a hankering right now. I've been looking at the new Winchester Model 70s that are coming out that you can get now. And if you look hard enough, you can find them in a 300 Win Mag with the walnut stock with the fleur-de-lis checkering on the pistol grip. That, man, I really like that rifle. It is a good, good-looking rifle. And I've got my eye spotted on a couple on Gunbroker. And if Mama don't hear this podcast in time, I may have a new one sitting on the shelf.
So, guys, again, thanks for listening. This has been kind of a all-around discussion on some medium-heavy cartridges, a little bit of history on how we got the 470 Nitro Express, a little bit of history on the 458 Win Mag. Hope you enjoyed listening to it, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
Did you want me to tell you the story about the sow grizzly that charged us, or you want to wait till next time?
We're getting a little long. Let's save that one for next time, and tune in next time to hear John's story on the sow grizzly.
All right. See you all next time.
Thank you, guys.